Guys, today I'm joined by Andrea Clark, and Andrea, thank you so much for joining me and taking out the time. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you so much for inviting me to be part of this. And before we go any further, I better tell everybody that I think there's going to be a massive thunderstorm where I am. So if we get a weird lighting effect, it's going to be lightning, not my strange lights.
Even if there isn't now, I think, because you've said that, I may just add that in After Effects and post, just to, you know, just to put that out there.
Some drama.
Exactly. So, I mean, look, you've been, from what I've seen from social media, which of course is the complete 100% truth of our lives, I've seen that you've been pretty busy in this time, you know, trying to do different things with one-to-ones and on different panels and pretty active. How have you find the whole period, and I guess...
I've been very, very busy not working, if that makes sense.
Sure.
I can't wait to get some proper paid casting work in, because then I can take a rest. But yeah, I've been doing loads of one-to-ones. I've been doing Q&As. I've been doing loads of stuff sort of with my own hat on, but also sure. Because I'm a board member of the Casting Directors Association, I've also been doing loads of stuff with those guys and doing loads of Q&As and helping get the YouTube channel up and running. So yeah, it's non-stop.
You're busier now than you were when you were in sort of regular casting mode.
Yeah, just give me a commercial casting for
there you
rest.
Go. You know, yeah, you got that. You can do that on autopilot. Was the YouTube channel and all that stuff things that you guys were going to do anyway, and this is just giving you the window to do it, or is it like an opportunity that you saw?
I think it's an opportunity that we saw. We were already, as Casting Directors Association, very proactive on social media, mainly on Twitter. But we saw that there was an appetite for information and breaking down those barriers between casting director and actor. And we were like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do some Q&As. Let's do some pre-records. I don't know if people have seen it or not, but it kind of, there are loads of sort of topics and cover them as a pre-recorded Q&A. So people sent in their questions on Twitter, and then we got a panel of three of our members to discuss the topic. We're having a bit of a break from it at the moment, because we needed to just kind of catch our breath.
It's a lot of work.
Exactly. Yeah, it is. But we're going to put some other content up there as well, and then we'll go back to Q&As in a bit.
It's been one of the really good things, I suppose, of the whole period, and that there's been that sort of swell of just community that's always been there, but I think really tapped into this time. And, you know, the whole casting community has been trying to give back in different ways, whether it's like what you're saying, or Spotlight one-to-ones, or the We Audition stuff that Sophie and Faye have done. And even then, though, there's that whole thing of supply and demand. And it's like the demand from actors, I always knew there was a lot of us, but just seeing this, yeah, whoa.
I know. I think it's like jumping onto, because I did a few on We Audition, and I'm still kind of trying to do them when I get chance, but the window of opportunity is getting smaller and smaller. But you open up the waiting room on We Audition, and just like your heart would go, oh my God, there are so many people. I'm not going to have chance to speak to everyone. So I was doing very, very quick, 5 minutes. Come in, say hello, ask me one question, tell me one fact, get on my radar, I'll look at your CV later, kind of meetings. Whereas I know other of my colleagues have been doing much more in-depth ones on We Audition.
And even then, it's tough. So I think with what you're doing with the YouTube channel, at least gives content that's just accessible to people no matter what, which I think is great, you know, to just have information at this time for everybody.
Yeah, and free.
And
it'll be up there
in perpetuity.
So, you know, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, as long as YouTube doesn't ban people, which they seem to be doing more and more these days, but that's a different conversation.
Also, I was just thinking we ought to probably check with everybody who's on there that they're okay with it being up in perpetuity.
I think it's one of those where in the era that we're in with digital media, it is what it
is. That's a wormhole. Let's not go down that wormhole.
Let's not go down that wormhole. Let's get back to commercial castings, which you can do inside and out. So look, let's, if we can, take a little bit of time just to talk a bit about your origins, I guess, like how you got into the industry, how you were, you know, inspired, I guess, to get into the casting world, and a little bit, I guess, about how that journey played out for you, if we can.
I wanted to be a casting director from the age of 7.
Wow.
Which is quite unusual.
I think you're the only the second person I've spoken to that said that they knew from such a defined young age. Most are, we were actors and then we fell into it, or like Manuel, he just loved film.
Yeah.
So how did you know at 7?
My mum had done a little bit of acting way before she had a family. So she'd gone to drama school. Here comes the lightning. As a kid, I was introduced to kind of theatre and like good drama from a very early age. So me and my sister would be allowed to watch things that other kids weren't. You know, I'd watch all the sort of highlighted dramas on the BBC and everything. And we lived quite near Birmingham and Stratford-upon-Avon, so we were able to get to good adult theatre. So from an early age, from about 4, I was going to theatre and seeing Shakespeare and stuff like that. And I never, ever wanted to act. I loved the theatre, but there was no draw to be up on that stage, not at all. But I loved actors, and I used to kind of watch TV and say to my mum, that's the actor who was in the thing we watched the other day. And she'd be like, yeah, it is. And then I kind of say, but I think the other person that we saw in the play the other week would have done that really well. And she was like, oh, yeah, perhaps you ought to be a casting director. So I did what my mum told me.
But she was basing that on the intuition that you were already showing the interest organically.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But I mean, how do you become a casting director?
Yeah.
I mean, my school were like, yeah, that's lovely. Why don't you go and be a secretary? And they hadn't got a clue. I was fortunate in that my dad was in the Merchant Navy, and he actually took part in the Falklands War. He was on one of the hospital ships. Mm-hmm. And when he came home, somebody from BBC Radio came to interview him. And rather than, because my dad was like, I'm not going down to London for that. So he made the poor producer come up to Shropshire. And we took him to the village pub for a pint and a meal. And I said, I'm tagging along, I'm going to find out. And so this poor radio producer had 15-year-old me going, had you become a casting director? I don't think he'd even heard of one himself. So he gave me the advice that somebody had given him on how to be a journalist, right, which was go to somewhere called the Polytechnic of Central London, which is now University of Westminster, and do what back then was a media studies degree. There were only about 4 of them in the country. And so I thought, yeah, I'll do that. It seems as near as I can get. So I did what some radio producer told me. Went and studied journalism and TV production. When I graduated, I wrote to every casting director in Contact, which was the little book that Spotlight used to publish. Back then, there were only, I think, 10 or 12 casting directors. So I wrote to all of them in the space of a couple of days, because back then we didn't have laptops. We had a typewriter. Sure. And I sent off my CV and said kind of, hey, I'm here. Can I come in, say hello? Nothing happened. And then one January morning, I got a phone call from Mr. Zimmerman saying, very similar to Manuel's story. What are you doing this afternoon? I'm like, haven't got anything planned. Right, Sloan Square, get to Sloan Square, which is what I did. And I ended up doing an afternoon working for Jeremy, just sorting through photos and stuff like that. The afternoon turned into a couple more days, into a week. 16 years later, I decided I probably ought to set up on my own.
Yeah.
In between, I kind of left Jeremy and gone to work for other casting directors, and I actually had a stint over at MTV on a reality program called The Real World.
Yeah.
And so I did street casting for that. So yeah, and Manuel and I just kind of, I'd be there for a bit and then I'd go off and work for somebody and Manny would come and replace me. Then Manny would go and do something and I'd come in. And then, I mean, I think for a while the two of us were there for probably 2 or 3 years together. But
was that when Jeremy took a little bit of a break and just was traveling and then sort of kept staying away and didn't come back? Or
that was always the case.
Fair enough. Okay.
If there was a beautiful job that needed location casting, he was the one who went.
Funny how that works.
Yeah. I think Manuel and I once felt very, very privileged that we got to do some location casting in Oxford.
Well, you know, you start small and then build from there, I guess, right? What I think is really interesting about that is the fact that obviously, you know, you went in and did a degree in something that doesn't have a degree for it. And even now, like, there isn't really a casting, like, you can't go and study how to be a casting director per se. I think I saw a few things that might.
There is going to be the National Film and Television School are starting to do I don't quite know what it is, whether it's a diploma or just a course on how to get into casting. So that is just something that's just starting.
But that's like now. That's 2020. With film schools, even now, like, they don't teach casting even as a one-term module to the film students. So when they cast their projects, they're kind of just leaving it as a last-minute thing, or maybe sometimes they will for final year get a casting director attached with the budget they have. But it's that kind of, I guess, mystical thing that people don't quite know how it works. But
yeah, it's something that I found quite I wouldn't say difficult, but kind of I didn't really know how to get into it. I wasn't quite sure when I got into it what it really involved.
If somebody wanted to get into it now, what advice would you give them then? Would you say go to college or university and get a degree or do something like this diploma? Or would you say actually try and just get the experience?
My advice probably is that I think getting the experience is the big thing. For me, part of that was doing a degree because I wanted to do a degree. I know a lot of people that isn't their bag. And doing a degree these days costs a lot more money than when I did it. I learned my job from other people. I learned it from other casting directors. I learned it by making the tea, doing the photocopying, typing up the casting advice notes, and basically serving an apprenticeship, I see it as. And one slight bugbear I have at the moment is that I think a lot of people try to get into casting without putting in the groundwork. I mean, as I say, I worked with somebody else for 16 years before I set up on my own because I realised that I needed to learn the job properly. And I think a lot of people now either work for an assistant for a couple of weeks or come out of school and go, I'm going to be a casting director. There's a lot to it that they don't know.
Mm.
However, there are now, there's Casting Directors Association, CDG, CSA, which were not around when I was trying to get into
it. Sure, but I suppose experience is experience that comes with just time in the game, right, as well.
Yeah.
And just seeing different things and being able to go, oh, this is similar to that time 5 years ago where I was on a project with such and such and this was what came up. How much of it is casting sort of things and how much of it is more just the production side and the logistics of understanding all the different production challenges that can come up, whether it's permits or what you're allowed to do? Or
I think what people don't understand about casting is how much bloody paperwork there is. And it's admin. So much of the job is admin. and knowing all of the rules and regulations and knowing where you can go to access the information if you don't have it to hand, which is what's great about having CDA, CDG, that if there's something you don't know or you something happens in a production that you've never encountered, you can pick up the phone and go, help, this has happened. Has it happened to anybody else? Can I learn from somebody else's experience? So that's great.
Which is here now, but probably wasn't obviously such an available commodity, you know, when you first started out, right?
Oh, absolutely not. It wasn't. I mean, that's why I think I put in such a long apprenticeship, because I wanted to learn all the different things. I mean, I started working in film and TV. I then went and worked with somebody else so that I could learn how to do commercials. As I say, I went to MTV to do street casting, because there's so many aspects of casting. It isn't just one single thing.
And if we bring it to, I guess, the performer's perspective, because obviously the majority of people that will tune into this are going to be actors. So when you're talking about the differences and the nuances there, in your experience and your point of view, how different does that work from a performer's point of view? You know, commercial casting versus screen for TV, screen for film versus, say, you know, I mean, real casting is different, obviously, but would you suggest different approaches from the actor's point of view, material aside, obviously?
Yeah, I think a lot of the time actors fall into... There's a very, very big difference between commercials and drama and what we need from an actor. In the commercial casting, it tends to be something much more immediate. You've probably only got 5 minutes to convey quite often a whole story. And we, in the actual advert, it might only be 15 seconds that you've got to tell that story and build that character. So I think quite often actors overthink it and try to put too much character and too much story into a commercial casting, when it's something as simple as, actually, we just want you to drink a glass of water. That's all we want you to do. Please don't overthink it. Just come in, drink a glass of water, put it down and go, thank you. And that's it. So
it's that thing where it's so simple that you think there has to be more to it, like it's a trick question or something.
Exactly. And so often less is more.
I think because commercials invariably don't have dialogue sometimes, or a lot of the time, that it's then how can you convey that just with an expression or a look? And then again, there is that thing of, well, I have to do a look or make an expression, as opposed to just maybe naturally.
Yeah, it is, as I say, it's overthinking. So often it is just something very simple that we want. And the stuff that we actually want you to overthink are the things that you don't naturally think about. It is actually, it's about the product. Mm-hmm. So if we want you to drink a glass of water, she reaches for a glass of water, we actually want to see the glass of water. It's about the glass of water. It's not about you.
Sure.
Because that's what we're selling.
That's the difference. And obviously most actors are taught about, you know, how do you come to serve the story, but of the character. And obviously with commercials, yes, it's the product. So how are you selling Coke, McDonald's, Nike, whatever? You know, don't have your hand covering the Coca-Cola sign on the
yeah,
can.
And if you're doing a self-tape, don't improvise with a Pepsi can. Yeah.
I can't taste the difference. They're all the same anyway, aren't they?
But yeah, you know what I mean. Yeah,
absolutely.
Things like that. So there is quite a big difference in the actual casting.
Sure.
And as a casting director, to kind of get your head around how to direct people in castings to get the best out of them, there is a very big difference between how I approach a commercial casting to how I approach a drama one.
That's interesting. I think the drama side, most people can maybe understand, because, you know, the direction is akin to a director on a set. You're kind of nudging them with certain notes to get a reaction to change the delivery of a line. How does that then, though, look from a commercial point of view? What kind of things do you do that are different in that setting to try and help the actor?
So often what you're actually trying to do is you're just trying to pare things back, trying to say, don't say so much, You know, if we're asking you to improvise, we're saying, just change that line here, do this, make sure you turn to face the camera in a certain way. Don't pick it up with your right hand, pick it up with your left hand because you're not blocking it. And then just kind of like saying, okay, so play it natural, now dial it up a little bit, dial it down. It's those sort of directions rather than nuanced character notes that we're going for.
Sure. Do you have a preference personally, or is it just that they're different in terms
They're different. And do you know what? I love a short film because you get the immediacy and the turnaround time of a commercial with the creative input of a feature film. So I do like a short film.
And I suppose also you don't have maybe the pressure of someone saying, we need a name attached for finance that, you know, is unrealistic as well, right?
Most of exactly. The time. Yeah. They normally just want to get the film made with the best possible actor in the role, which is the kind of casting that I like. I like having the best actor for the role rather than making sure that we've got a marquee name or a name that's going to put bums on seats.
Sure. So if I get to some of the questions, there's one that kind of, I think naturally, well, some of the questions that people sort of sent in, I should say, there's some that are naturally come off of that. One question that was sent in was basically around what are the things that you look for from an actor's performance when they're in the room? You kind of alluded to that, I suppose, with the commercial side. You know, from a screen perspective, are there certain things that you kind of always want to try and see?
In a drama?
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's a good point too. It depends, right? It depends
on the genres. Yeah. So I would say for like a drama, so for a short film, TV, feature, I want an actor to bring an element of themselves to the role so that they can connect with it, because that is what makes it special. That's what makes us remember their performance. It's when they find something to identify with within the role, and then you can totally see that the character becomes alive. I think that's the main thing. I want the actor to be confident, not overconfident, but to be confident that they know they can play that role. Because we want them to get the job, the director wants them to get the job. I think so often actors walk in almost apologetic and kind of like, oh, I'm trying hard to, you know, please you. Like, actually, no, we want you here. There's a reason we've asked you to attend the casting or do a self-tape. And that is because we think you are right to play this role. All we're asking you to do is show us that you can play this role.
It's a really important message that I think has come out, you know, from pretty much all of the peers of yours that have come on and spoke about it, and on other shows and chats too, because I think it's an idea of, oh, it's like a job interview. And so you put pressure on yourself about the fact that I'm trying to get something before you even get in the room, and you psych yourself out. And obviously it's so out of your hands and your control to even think that way, that the pressure, I guess, can crush that sort of, I guess, freedom in the moment to just be creative. And I always say, I don't know what the answer to how you get around that is. I don't know if you have any thoughts or tips. Mine has just been, it's experience. Like, you just have to do auditions enough to eventually get to a point where you go, okay, you know what, it's not that I don't care, but it's also that I don't care to the extent that when I leave the room, I'm carrying it with me.
I think you kind of touched on a thing saying it's like a job interview. It's not actually a job interview. It is your job. Part of your job is to go to those castings and auditions. They're as much part of your job as actually being on set. So just relax into it. And kind of, I would say, a tip that I actually give kids at kids' casting sessions is, don't get whipped up into that frenzy in the waiting room of everybody else getting, you know, holding onto their lines and trying to remember them and getting wound up. If it works for you, put your headphones on, listen to some music, wait for your turn. just don't get caught up in that drama of it all, because we want you to come in being relaxed and happy. You know, as I say to kids and to parents, you know, if you want to just bring your homework or read a book before you come in, just remove yourself from the drama of it all. Obviously know the script, you know, that's the first thing you do. But once you've learned the script and had a little refresher of it, don't hold on to it and keep reading it over and over again in the waiting room, because you will just get yourself really kind of tight and uptight. Just, yeah, have your casting playlist on your iPod or whatever.
It is a mindset thing, really, isn't it? It's, you know, if you're not relaxed, you can't come in and play, and that's half the battle, I think. Yeah. It's more that than how am I going to deliver that one line in that particular part of the monologue. Like, it's not that nuanced.
Yeah. And I think something that has happened during this sort of lockdown time is that casting directors and actors have had these one-to-ones and Zooms and everything, and we're connecting with each other on a more personal level in a way that we wouldn't actually ever been able to connect in a casting room or even in a general meeting in our offices. We're getting little windows into each other's lives, and we're getting to find out that we're all human. You know, sometimes we don't put our makeup on and we don't wash our hair, and you know, actors are seeing us as human, but equally we are seeing actors as other human beings, which is all we are.
Yeah, I think it's easy to get caught up in the labels of my label is actor, your label is casting director, that person's label is whatever, and that helps us, I guess, navigate and process what we maybe do as an experience, as a job. But to your point, I couldn't have put it better. We are, with this window that we've just gone through, getting to see and remember that there's so much more to it than that. And that takes the pressure off, you know, that then someone can come in and be in a session with you and then feel like, oh, well, you know, I feel like I know you a bit better and you're here to help me. And it's a collaboration. Yeah. It's not like I've got my 5 minutes to prove something to the headmistress.
Exactly. And also, I think there's been this kind of feeling that casting directors are the gatekeepers.
I say that all the time. Gatekeepers of Narnia.
We're not. I don't think we are the gatekeepers. I think we're the bridge.
Well, it's not your decision half the time.
Not our decision. Yeah, it isn't our decision. And we're not there as a gatekeeper keeping you out of auditions. We're there as a bridge.
Bringing us
in. Let you into the work. We're between you and the director. We're there to make that happen. We're there to make that journey.
Definitely. And so I guess with that in mind, obviously, the next sort of big thing that, you know, an actor would think is, great, so I know that. Now how do I like get my GPS to bring me to that bridge to have you help me across? How do I get on your radar? That was my best analogy in the moment.
That was pretty good.
You know, there's different ways. The typical, you know, headshots and showreels, I guess, are the main things. A spotlight presence and sort of CV.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's a lot to unpack in all of that. Is there sort of one or two key things that you would say is essential that would stand out more, how you personally like?
I mean, because I've been doing lots of one-to-ones with actors during this time where I've been analysing their spotlight page for them and kind of going through it, and as I say, almost like forensic, like I'm on CSI and going, oh yeah, have you thought about this and that? It's making our life easy is what we need. We need you. It's like it's a jigsaw puzzle. We don't want you to give us a box full of pieces rattling around. We want you to give us the finished thing, going, this is what I'm like. So make sure that your pictures are up to date, that they look like you, and that they represent the kind of role that you're going to play. Make sure your showreel is up to date and it's not got material on it that's from a different decade. If you haven't got a showreel, just put up a monologue. We want to see you. We want to see what you look like. Just, that is your window. That is your access point. The first thing we see is going to be a tiny little JPEG of you about that big. That's
That, and what you're
that
seeing
those
JPEGs.
That make me want to click on it. Yeah,
well, I was going to say, what is that? What is that that makes it stand out? Because you're going through so many. Mm. Is there a set thing? Is it the eyes? Is it being zoomed in enough? You know, sometimes you get headshots that are a bit more...
Personality. If I can see somebody's personality coming through on their headshot, that's what I want. Mm-hmm. Obviously, each casting brief is different. So on some, I'm going to want somebody to look, you know, like a thug. So if I'm going to want them to have, you know, a shot that's kind of moody. Other things, I'll be, you know, after a bubbly teenager, so I'm going to want a nice bubbly picture. But basically, I want to see personality come through. I don't want a generic "I'm an actor" headshot.
Which I guess is more important to then look at how you can get different types of personalities or sides of yourself from your headshot photography session. So it's not just one generic.
I would also say to actors, before you have your headshots taken, have a chat with the photographer so that the photographer gets to know you, gets to know the person, so that they're not just taking headshots of another actor. They're taking your headshots, and they'll know what to say to you. You know, have a conversation with them about what you like, what kind of pizza you like, or what music you're listening to. So that we get an idea of the person and not just the actor.
And would you also say it's important for the actor to go in not just with that as them as the person, but also an idea and understanding of how the industry kind of sees them? So if I go up for certain types of roles and auditions mostly, then I need to try and cater to the fact that that's what...
I think it's having an understanding of the kind of roles that are going to be your main focus.
Sure.
So, yes, you go to drama school and learn to play all these different wonderful roles. But at the end of the day, that's your focus. You're going to end up playing pretty much those roles. So show me that you can do that and you can do that. Don't show me all of this. So I think it is just having an understanding of, you know, I'm basically going to play nice mom, or I'm going to play thug. Yeah. Or police. That's the type of role that I'm going to have. So have that understanding of the type of role you're likely to get and show us that.
Yeah. And I guess obviously the same with the showreel perspective. I think sort of one of the questions around showreels becomes about whether we should try and have different ones for different things. So, you know, would you suggest having a different reel for drama versus comedy? Or if not on that side, at least would say languages for actors that maybe speak a different language.
I would always say, if you've got languages or a special skill, like you're highly skilled at boxing or something, have a special reel, have a separate reel. So that if I am casting for a boxer, and I know that the primary need for that role is that you can box really well, I will look at your boxing reel before I look at your show reel. If you speak Italian and French and German, put that together on the reel, but label it. Tell me what language I'm listening to on screen. I only speak English, so I need help. You've got to tell me.
Sure.
I can't tell the difference between Russian and Polish necessarily, so help me.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah.
And comedy, I would say I personally would say leave it within your main showreel, but I know other casting directors will say put it separately. We all have our own opinions, so you can't please all of us.
Now, we live in an era where I think absolutism is getting more and more sort of, I don't know, pushed onto people, and it just isn't realistic. I think that's the thing. It's such a subjective world. And
exactly. I mean, I would say if you've got a lot of comedy and a lot of drama, then maybe separate them out. Mm-hmm. But equally, I don't want you to have so many different showreels up there that I don't kind of even know where to start.
For people who maybe, say we go to the boxing example, right? Obviously, someone maybe now listens to this and go, well, I was amateur boxer, I can box or whatever. I don't have any footage of me that's high production level and sort of from a film. What about just them filming something with their camera on their phone?
Yeah, on their phone. Yeah,
exactly.
we've all got a smartphone these days, well, apart from my mum. But yeah, just film on your phone. We don't need it to be super, super high, you know, production values. And the same with if you're recording a monologue. I don't need it to be amazing quality, especially if you're doing it right now. You know, put it up, label it as your isolation or your lockdown monologue, and I'm going to know what limitations you've been recording it under. So, yeah.
I guess just so you can see those skills. With the language point, because this comes up a lot, and I'd be keen to just get your perspective on it. For actors that have English as a second or even third language, it's not their native tongue, and they have an accent especially, do you have any tips and advice for them, mostly within the confines of how should they position themselves in the UK market? A lot of them ask, should I learn RP? Should I learn how to sort of nuance my accent down and neutralize the fact that I'm foreign? Or should I just hone on that smaller niche, which has less opportunities?
I'm not sure if we frozen for a minute.
We did a little bit. Now we're back.
Okay. I did hear it.
Okay.
My personal opinion is use your non-English language as your USP. If I want authenticity. So if I'm casting a role that is Italian, I want an Italian actor. I don't want a British actor with a dodgy Italian accent. I equally would rather not have a Spanish actor play it. I want an Italian. But also, I am very aware that the country we live in, especially in London and other big metropolitan areas, that people who do... If I walk out into my street today, I will hear a variety of accents just walking up and down my street. There'll be American, French, German, and they're all people who live here in London. So if I'm casting the role of a doctor in London, traditionally, like 10 years ago, that would have been a white male with an RP accent aged about 50. Not now. Mm-hmm. That doctor could be a 27-year-old French lady who has a Moroccan background or something. Mm-hmm. That could easily be a doctor in the UK. So I want to open up roles that are just down as, you know, doctor. I don't just think white male. So yeah, those roles are out there. And they don't necessarily have Italian written in front of them.
Yeah, I think that's a thing. It's that whole thing of, you know, to your point again, the CEO used to always be white guy, 40, 50, you know, certain look and certain type. And why, you know, unless it has to be that way for the story and it's written specifically for that, then I think, yeah, it's important, I guess, to have casting open up to who's best for the part. What's exactly best for the part, respective of anything else.
And quite often we'll find that things are written in a certain way. Mm-hmm. And then we'll say to the director or the producer, the role of, you know, secretary, you've written it as a woman. Could we make it a guy? And they're like, oh, that's good. Let's do that. That's interesting. We haven't thought of that. Mm-hmm.
Which is your job, right, from the casting side, to give different suggestions and viewpoints to what the production team and director have from being in development so long, and they're paying you for that more than anything as well, really, I suppose.
Yeah, and I think they're listening to us more now, which is lovely. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think in the past they'd be, oh no, it's written as a woman. We're like, well, it doesn't have to be. So we've been trying to push those boundaries for a long time as casting directors, but production companies and directors and luckily ad agencies are coming along with us now, and they're on the journey with us. So I mean, I'm sure everybody who's watched TV commercials in the UK in the last 5 years has noticed the difference.
Yeah, I think it's important to sort of, not, I guess, blanket just cast stuff based on what it used to be historically, because to your point, it's not a representation of what the country is anymore. And people want to see that authenticity on their screens and in those stories. Let's see what other questions I got on here that I've missed. I think I've gone through all of them. There's only two that I want to touch on. I think one of them is more around the agent sort of dynamic. And I guess, what's your personal, first of all, preference when it comes to actors contacting you? Would you rather that come from the agent if they have an agent repping them and have that be the vehicle of communication? Do you prefer actors not to contact you at all? What's your take on that?
I would say, for me, I don't mind who contacts me, whether it's the agent or the actor. As long as it's these days it's by email.
Sure.
Nobody sends post anymore. So if an email comes through, I want it to be short, succinct. I want links. I'm not going to download your show reel. I want a link to your, so I can see it on Spotlight or Vimeo. Have a reason for getting in touch with me. Like, I've got new headshots or I'm in this production. And at the moment, quite a lot of people are actually getting in touch with me going, hey, by the way, just to let you know that I'm in a shared household with another actor. So if you're trying to cast people from the same household, you can cast me and my flatmate. So I would say keep it short, keep it sweet, but have a strategy with your agent. Speak to your agent and say, who are you going to contact about this and who am I going to contact? If you've kind of done a workshop with me in the past, or I've cast you in something, or you've had a one-to-one, it might make sense for you to be the one saying, hi, remember we did a one-to-one during COVID, I was the person who talked about banana muffins. That might make sense, but it could be that your agent is the person who's got a stronger link with me. Mm-hmm. And your agent could say, oh hi, it was great that we went to the theatre whatever day, have a look at my client. But don't both do it.
Yeah, it's knowing who has the relationship that's slightly stronger, and then I guess right hand and left hand being aligned and singing from the same hymn sheet. Otherwise, yeah, you guys are busy enough, then probably it's frustrating when you have the same question coming from two different people about the same thing.
Yeah, and I would say if I've got an active breakdown and it's out on Spotlight and you've got an agent, leave it up to your agent to suggest you. Mm-hmm. You can always nudge your agent and say, oi, Andrew's doing this, why don't you suggest me? And they can turn around and go, well, the reason I've not suggested you is because you're not free for the dates, or
I already have, or whatever.
There's a bit of information that Andrew didn't put in her tweet, that you've got to have a German passport and you don't, so that's mm-hmm. why I've not suggested you. Mm-hmm. So, leave that up to your agent, because the agent will often have a lot more information about the project than you guys will know about.
Yeah, that's one. Actually, I lied. I have another question now in true Columbo fashion, but it's a quick one. Hopefully, you mentioned German passport there. So I don't. No one has the answer to this with the whole Brexit conundrum. Yeah. You know where I'm going.
Yeah, I know where you're going.
But I'm only asking because I've had people come on, and other casting directors. I think Lucy Lennox was on a few weeks ago with me, and she said she's sometimes in the recent past has literally asked for people with Irish passports specifically. Mm. We don't know, obviously. It's more, I guess, have you seen anything with anything that you've done specifically where that's actually been a prerequisite from production yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Not yet. However,
maybe
it's going to happen.
I'm commercials sure. Especially, right?
Yeah. It's so sad. And I'm just really, really jealous of anybody who's got a European passport. So...
Yeah, and I guess for anybody who could probably get one, now is the time to look into that.
I know. I know, it is definitely, absolutely. If you've got any way of getting one, I think now is the time to be doing it.
Do you feel that's going to be specifically for commercials? Do you think that with film and TV, it might affect it, but maybe not as much because the turnaround times are different for visas and stuff?
Hopefully it won't have such a problem on film and TV. However, there are those little, you know, those little small roles that they kind of suddenly go, oh, can you quickly cast this role? Sure. You know, it won't be for the leads or even for the secondary characters, but for those little sort of day players, it really could, it could matter.
Do you have, so, I mean, how do you think that might change things just for you from your perspective, from a commercial casting point of view, if they only want people with European passports, do you feel like they might shift more to just productions looking at casting in the countries they want to film in?
Yeah, I'm terrified. Yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, we were all kind of worried about that and psyched up about, you know, trying to work out how we're going to sort that out. And then COVID happened. And we're now trying to work out how to actually even hold casting sessions. Let alone have the problem of visas and passports. That feels like a small problem at the moment compared to trying to work out how to do self-tapes and Zoom castings and make sure that we don't get you in rooms with 40 other actors.
That was, I guess, going to sort of be the final little tidbit around, you know, how do we maybe see things playing out with sort of a post, I don't want to say post-COVID, but post-lockdown. And we don't know, obviously. We're still super, super early stages. But it seems very slowly that people are trying to find ways of, you know, obviously lots of self-tapes are going to be the first port of call. Do you think it'd be, if there are recalls, that might be in person and it's going to be staggered sessions with very big...
What I'm hoping is that we will move to... a format where it's going to be self-tapes probably for the first round of casting. I personally don't think we will ever go back to doing big first round auditions in person, because the benefits of, I mean, there are pros and cons, but the benefits of doing self-tape are that it's greener, it's cutting down on carbon footprint, it's also allowing us to be less London centric, so where you're based is not going to matter so much. I don't mind if your self-tape is done in North London, Paris, Glasgow, wherever, as long as you can be booked as London based, if that's what I'm after. Mm-hmm. So I think self-tapes are going to be round one, and I think that's probably here to stay.
But that also opens it up for you to see potentially more people as well, right? And you don't have the overheads of hiring a studio for the day and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there are going to be other overheads that we're discovering. But it does mean that kind of, personally, I think there'll be times when I've ummed and ahed over to get an actor in for a role because I just don't know them well enough, but I'm not sure. So in the past, when I've had limitations of the casting session that's only 4 hours long, and the fact that I'm going to be sat next to my director, I will probably err on the side of caution. Whereas if I'm getting myself tape, I'll probably be more generous and go, do you know what? Let's see what happens. I could be right. I could be wrong. And if I've made the wrong judgment call on this and that I've called in somebody to self-tape who isn't right for it, I don't necessarily have to send it in. So yes, the option, I think probably more tapes. We will be asking for more self tapes. Damn it, that's more work for us. So I think round one will be self tapes. I think round two will probably be a video Zoom call with the director. And then if we get to round three, that will probably still be in person, in a room, but with sort of 45 minute intervals rather than the usual 7 minutes. By the time you get to that point, you will be down to the last two or three people. So, you know, if you are based in Liverpool and we're asking you to travel to London, at least you know you're in with a fighting chance. You know, you're one of three, not one of 400 or whatever. Yeah.
And you're going there for, I guess, more of a chemistry read in some of those cases too, as well. Like it's.
Yeah, we haven't quite worked out how we're going to do chemistry reads over self-tape and Zoom yet, but you know.
One day at a time, just with life, let alone the industry, I think at the moment, to be fair.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, look, I think we've given some really insightful stuff from your experience, and also some very, I say, practical and grounded, honest feedback on where we're at. And that's, you know, it's not all singing and dancing, and it's not all doom and gloom either. It's very realistic. But, you know, what I guess final message could you maybe share, just about maybe your views or process or hopes for the future, that people can kind of have this buttoned off with at the end and feel like there's a nice uplift to the story?
I think that it is a process that we're all learning, and it's a journey we're going on together. Filming is already happening again. You know, commercials have started to film. My emails have just started, you know, I'm starting to get people saying, hey, you know, we're hoping to film this year. So there is a rainbow. We just need to get to it. I think that's what it is. But yeah.
Wonderful. Awesome. Well, listen.
One thing we've not told. I ate Manuel's Kit Kat.
There we go. I did it. I didn't want to bring it up. Until just to see if you did. Was that weird when that came in the post and you opened it up and you just saw this Kit Kat fallout?
It was a bit strange. It was actually
a genius.
It was great. Yeah, and also because I'm pretty certain that I know he said Jeremy opened the envelope, but I'm pretty certain I did, because I really remember eating that Kit Kat. I hadn't had any breakfast, and then I was opening it, and I got a cup of coffee. And, oh, look, here's a Kit Kat. And so I ate it.
There you go.
My memory is that I was going on holiday, not that I was sick.
Right.
And that I'd left a pile of, I knew Jeremy wouldn't cope on his own with me on holiday for 2 weeks. But he was adamant he didn't need anybody else in the office. So I left a little stack of CVs on the side where he'd find them. And then I came back from holiday and found Manuel in the office.
It's like Inception. Look, it's crazy when you can kind of look and see which things you can remember from what's happened in your past, and then how different people maybe see them slightly differently.
No, yeah, it's whether, but I mean, Manny thinks I was off sick, but I'm pretty certain I was on holiday in Greece.
Either way, it all worked out.
I could have been sick in Greece. There we go.
Maybe. The point is that Kit Kat from him was consumed by you, and there's something really kind of nice and romantic about that, as a little casting world story, I think. when you found that and you tweeted me about it, I couldn't stop laughing, because I just thought, this is the world we live in now. We're now on social media. Somehow this story still can exist.
But also, I must say that anybody who has worked with Jeremy, Jeremy is a lovely, lucky person, but he is... to work for him is something quite different. And I think the Zimmerman family, anybody who's worked within the Zimmerman organization, we all stick together, and we all, there's a sort of weird bond that we all have. And we may not, I mean, I hadn't spoken to Manny in years, and then suddenly we're in touch again and we're having a chat, and there's a whole load of us, this little network of people, and we're all still in touch with Jeremy. And we all, you know, catch up every now and again, which is great.
That's what it's about. It's about that community and that family, and you know, when you kind of don't speak and then it's been years and you do, it's like nothing ever happened. And it's just right back to that vibe of as if you were in the office and in Sloan Square again.
I know, it's ridiculous. But yeah, on Fantastic. That note, I'm probably going to go and find a Kit Kat.
There you go. What a great way to put it off. I'm not even getting paid for that. I'm going to ask them to give me some kind of promotional plug or something.
Oh, we all need it.
We all need it. I'll let you know. I'll pass on the royalties. Brilliant. If I do. Fantastic.
You do.
Thank you so
Lovely
much.
To meet you.
Likewise.
Take care. Have a good rest of the day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.